You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Hey everybody, this is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. And pretty darn thrilled to have Ivana Yellowback on the show. And I just wanted to welcome you, Tansi. Hello, welcome.
Awesome, thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited.
Yeah, I am. I first got introduced to you, you know, your work in storytelling with the Creepy Teepee.
Yeah.
Program. Nice. With S.A. Lawrence Welsh, who's been a guest on his show, and quite a brilliant and engaging woman, and I learned a lot from. I have a bunch of stuff to ask you about,
yeah.
But can we just stop? Like, can we just start? Like they're yeah. just working with SA and doing those. Oh gosh, I love those stories.
So thanks. Yeah, definitely. So SA and I, we actually got connected from a mutual friend of ours, a friend that I've known for years. His name is Natani Means. He's Navajo and Lakota from down south in New Mexico. And so him and another friend, Anton Edwards, who's also from, I think, Omaha, Nebraska. He's Omaha and Lakota. But they would come on and they would share scary, spooky stories. And so I came online on their Instagram lives a couple of times and shared some of my stories. And Essay was watching one of them. And I'm not sure if she went on also, but she connected with me and added me on Instagram. We started messaging and she's like, yeah, like, you know, the stories you're telling are stories or situations that have happened to me, or like, I feel very connected to them. So we just kind of, you know, we haven't met in person yet. There was a time that she was going to come to Winnipeg. I think this was last June. And she didn't end up making it. I think she ended up getting sick at that time. So she wasn't able to come out. And yeah, but we just connected online. And then she just spurred this idea because I was also sharing some stories. And I was just on Facebook because a lot of Indigenous people use Facebook, especially in Canada. And a lot of our community members here in Manitoba, like a lot of our grandparents are on there and elders. And so a lot of our young people still utilize Facebook a lot. So I was on it sharing some stories. And then she's like, what do you think about, you know, sharing some stories online and on Instagram? And I'm like, yeah, like I'm down, you know, I'm down to storytell. So then that's just how it started. And so with Creepy Teepee, because she is Cree, she's Métis Cree, and I'm Cree from Manitoba. That's how it came, was like creepy, like Cree, P, and then teepee, just kind of like a little jingle that kind of like came together in a good way. So ever since then, we've been sharing, and we actually have some exciting plans coming up. She is going to be coming to Winnipeg sometime either this May or June. So we do have some stuff in the works for Creepy Teepee. We're super excited about it.
Oh, yeah. Somehow I missed the Cree at the beginning of it.
Okay.
A revelation, and I feel quite silly.
It's all good. It was actually Essay's idea. Like she is just like, she's so awesome. She's so funny. And that was her idea. And I was like, I'm down for whatever it is that you want to do. Even like the Creepy Teepee designs with us pointing with our lips. It's not us blowing kisses, like we're pointing with our lips. So you'll see if anybody checks out our Instagram page. She actually put up shirts for sale, which were super cool. That's something I never thought of. I was like, wow, I never would see myself as a cartoon on a t-shirt. It's wild. But she's just like, she's just amazing. Like she just knows the ins and outs of you know, these kinds of projects and productions, and I'm just like along for the ride. So yeah.
Very, very creative. I believe originally from Alberta. And so on the Manitoba Winnipeg, I did tell you I'm wearing my Winnipeg Jets hat.
Yes. And yeah, I see it.
not to just be a sucker here, but like I saw the you had some Winnipeg gear on, and I'm a big hockey fan, and one cool thing on the show too, I had Leticia Spence, who did the design for the Indigenous
For Wazak.
For the Manitoba Moose and
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. They're actually having their Manitoba Moose is actually having their Indigenous celebration tonight, and then Winnipeg is the Jets are having it tomorrow. Yeah. So I was looking at some of the Manitoba Moose gear because they're Follow Your Dreams, like the Indigenous version of their jerseys, are so nice. I've been wanting to purchase one for so long. I do have a Wazak jersey, like the Indigenous version of the Jets, but I'm so hoping to get one of those. Yeah, but there's such beautiful designs.
They are just gorgeous designs. And anyways, that's really exciting. I think I saw a preview on the Manitoba, and I didn't realize the Winnipeg the night, the Indigenous night, was tomorrow. It's good weekend. Yeah. Good weekend to be chatting.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
So I been very impressed, and I've learned a lot from your teaching. I've run into your YouTube videos and talking about the treaty system, which I'm down in Oregon in the U.S. and since I started doing the podcast, I encountered and learned so much about Indigenous culture and art, and also seen the differences. Same, but the differences with the U.S. and Canada. So learning from you has been like really helpful for me to understand. And also, as part of the show, I've been very fortunate to learn and to advocate around MMIW, Girls, Two Spirits, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons. And what I wanted to ask you about is your work doing that, your work advocacy, you work in the community, you help other people. And I just wanted to ask you about, about doing that work and, the kind of places you've been able to, present and teach folks, hopefully, if they're listening.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been in social services for over 10 years. Throughout my university degree, so I have two degrees, one in sociology and one in bachelor of social work. I'm going to my master's program this fall. I was working in the community through the entire time of university. And a lot of the work that I do today, so now I'm self-employed. I do a lot of contract work with different agencies and organizations. And some of the work I do is I develop programs. So just taking my social work background, I work with a lot of Indigenous women and girls. So a lot of moms and young women. So some of the programs that my cousin and I, her name is Raven Hart. She's from Nisichawisik Cree Nation, which is Nelson House in Manitoba. And, her and I, we developed a program. So just one example, around the Mi'kiwap. So the Mi'kiwap in Cree is the teepee. So teepee is actually a Dakota word. Mi'kiwap is what we call that structure. That's like our language for it. So in the Mi'kiwap, there are 13 poles and 15 poles on the outside. So there's two that control the flaps. So her and I developed this program of a 15-week schedule around the 15 teepee poles, because each of the poles have a virtue. And we do life skills. We have program twice a week. So we do life skills. We do grief and loss, because we're both she was grief and loss trained, and I just come in and do that work, that counseling work alongside of her. And then we also do a training. It's called traditional family parenting, but we're kind of making it a little bit different and doing changes on it, just based on our territory here in Treaty One. So the 15 poles, they all have a different virtue and different teachings, and they're every three represents the life stages of a child. So in our Cree teachings, there are about seven life stages. You know, you have like when baby's born, to when they're toddlers, to when they're children, to when they, before they come of age, and when they come of age, and even when they come of age, there's also another kind of stage of their coming of age, even when they're young adults, etc., and things like that. And it just kind of goes around those teachings, and it also talks about how to have a healthy home and community. So why we developed the program, because a lot of the women we work with in our culture and Cree culture, specifically, the women are the leaders, and we're the ones who govern the home. And so it's very different based on how patriarchy is, where it's like the man is the man of the house, things like that. In Cree culture, it's the opposite. It's the woman who has the right to remove a man out of her home if he's being disrespectful or abusive in any way to her and the children. So we just based it around the Mi'kmaq, around the TB, and the work that we do with our moms that we work with, we uplift them through those teachings and through that ceremony knowledge, because a lot of our teachings are in our language. So even like a lot of the words we use are surrounded by the woman. And so many of our ceremonies as Cree people come from the woman or are modeled around the woman's body in some aspect. There's just so many beautiful teachings, and all of it's in the language. Like I always tell people, you know, the blueprint of who our people traditionally are is in the language. And with colonization, you know, that removal of not being able to understand or speak our languages, that really shifted our mindset and the way that we see the world. So when we look at the language and learn the language and learn the teachings that are embedded within it, like it just really opens the doorway to that worldview that our ancestors carried. So that's in the Mi'kmaq. And we developed a program around the Mi'kmaq. When the women are done, they graduate with a grief and loss certificate, decolonizing family parenting certificate, life skills. And then we also give them a bundle. So we'll have like medicines that are traditional to our territory here in Treaty One. And then we celebrate them. Yeah. So throughout the program as well, because it is 15 weeks, we'll do ceremonies. So we'll do cedar bath ceremonies, sweat lodges, pipe ceremonies, full moon ceremonies, and we'll do all the teachings of those ceremonies in that education. And then we'll also do life skills that are indigenous framed and based, as well as grief and loss, and then decolonizing family parenting, which talks about the traditional teachings of our language and those parenting structures. Yeah. So that's just one program.
That's just one program. I mean, incredible empowerment. I heard some of your comments upon with colonialism and treaty system, and I was surprised to hear about the traditional role of the woman. Do you find in doing that, because working with the women that you do, are they is there a decent amount of them that are surprised by the power of that system? Of, I mean, it's traditional, but this the massive loss or disruption, they kind of surprise. I just hear empowerment in it, like in understanding the power of being a woman within the culture. Is it a surprise?
Some of it is. Some of them just kind of, when we tell them about these teachings and cultural practices, like a lot of them already have it in their families, but they don't realize until we talk with them that they're like, oh, okay, so this is why my granny was the head of our family and why she was like the boss, because grannies are like cookums are the boss. And then just, yeah, so a lot of them, through the program, there's a lot of women, because even though we have the 15 weeks, we have an open door policy where it's like, once you're done, you don't have to leave. Like you can come back for several cohorts. So we've had families who are raising babies in the program. So we have babies who are born, you know, like mom was in labor during one of the program days and, you know, gave birth and are bringing newborns in. So we've had newborns grow up, which is really cool. And so, yeah, like a lot of our ladies are starting to really put that forward in their lives, and it helps with their self-esteem and their self-identity. Because, you know, being an Indigenous woman within Winnipeg or within any like city center is very difficult, especially with the high sexualization and racism, especially in Winnipeg. You know, like last year, you know, we had three sisters that were placed in the landfill, and how that was a huge thing just for, you know, relatives to be searched for within the landfills here in Winnipeg. Cause it's like, our people are really due to that colonized, you know, dialogue of who our people are, there's still that really, really intense racism. So yeah, so a lot of our moms, you know, are really very, are getting their power back and know that they are important, know that they matter, know that they are so important within the vitality and well-being of our communities. And so that's some of the work that we ensure to tell them and to let them know. And yeah, like I grew up in ceremony hearing these from various elders in our Treaty One territory here. So it's like now it's my responsibility to share that forward, because none of the knowledge that my family carries or that I know belongs to me, like it belongs to community. So yeah.
No, I have this, it's kind of an odd, curious thing of like a deep interest in Winnipeg. And like, I think it's, you know, it's like from hockey, but it's also, I've read a lot about the labor history in Manitoba. I'm a labor unionist by day. And so, you know, in some film and stuff. So it's been a very, you know, it's like kind of outside. A deep, now in that too, there's been the kind of the difficult and disturbing aspect of Indigenous women in Manitoba and a lot of stories that come that come out of there. And again, from the outside, I also see more, and I've heard about this dynamic, more illustrious, beautiful celebrations in part, in words, like even at the hockey game and other type of events, that look to honor or Indigenous folks more than my setting in the U.S. It just seems like that there's
more. Definitely. Yes. Yeah. And that's actually, as you're saying that, that's actually one thing that I noticed too. Cause it's like with the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation, not really pushed forward and really catapulted, you know, that the notion that we are treaty partners, especially in Treaty One territory, like we signed treaties together with the British Crown and all those that, you know, descend to Canada following, like immediately adopt that just by birth of being Canadian within that treaty jurisdiction. So yeah, with the TRC and the unraveling of, the truth of the residential school system. And the residential school system is just one aspect. There's still the Indian Act, which is a huge, huge monster to really pick away at. Like the Indian Act is something I think as a nation, as communities, we're going to have to look at eventually, because it's the residential schools was just one aspect of this huge other aspect. But yeah, as you were saying, when we drove down to Minnesota, we went to go see the Wilds, so Minnesota Wilds versus the Winnipeg Jets. And I was actually, like, they didn't have an opening for acknowledging the territory. You know how in Winnipeg we have land acknowledgments. It's like we're on Treaty One territory, you know, land of the Métis, et cetera. Anishinaabe, Cree, Dakota. When we went down there, they have a very big Native American population. I actually have some friends that have gone through Minneapolis, and they have various gatherings and ceremonies in that territory, and how there was no acknowledgement of any of the indigenous folks. So that was like super different. I was like, that's so interesting how there was no acknowledgement of Native Americans, but then you come back home, you know, in Winnipeg, there's always that land opening. And it's the same thing at the Mount Tuamoose games. It is very different in that aspect of just over the border, how that changes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it creates this dynamic that I know must be complicated for folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the sense of like, it is helpful for me to hear and see, and for it to be consistently present, the words loudly spoken mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. what land folks are on, you know, not the trivial aspect or the repetition, that the words are spoken that way. And thank you for that. And the total absence is near total absence. Mm-hmm. I also had like a perspective shift on this. I was talking to Paige Pettibon, who's a Native artist up in Tacoma, Washington. And when I'd gone to, it was a Seattle Mariners, it was a baseball game. And there was a ceremony before the game and a traditional dance.
Nice.
And I was so excited about it, but it was like so quick. And like in my mind, I was like, that wasn't enough. And when I was talking to her, there was such much more of a subtle like way of approaching it. It's like, that was our space. It's beautiful to have that space, and it's a good thing, you know? So like, mm-hmm. I found like in my head, I was like, you know, more like I'm an advocate. Like I'm just an advocate all the time. I'm like, more, there should have been more. Mm-hmm. But it's good to see. But I think, you know, I think it, not just that, the structures, that really impact, mm-hmm. as folks, and the shocking level of violence that, mm-hmm. Could be subject to, I wanted to ask you about yourself and mm-hmm. you as a creator, you as a storytelling artist. I don't know if you like the term artist, but like creator.
Okay.
No, it's like for yourself, like embodying that space as a creator, as a storyteller. Did you mm-hmm. see? Were those things that happened early on for you, or like at a point you kind of felt you had more of a role, or has there always been part of you?
I feel like it's always been part of me, because I remember when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I remember grabbing like a pen and a pad in my living room and then starting my first trilogy. And I was like, this is going to be a novel series. It's going to be a trilogy. And I only wrote like 2 pages, but like just that creativity of like wanting to share stories and wanting to storytell, I think just was something that just came innately. But my mom, actually, on my mom's side, when I was doing the Mi'kmaq teachings with the Treaties Commissions in Manitoba, one of my relatives actually made a comment, and they were like, oh, she's a storyteller just like her grandpa or her great grandpa. And so there's actually a video of my Japan, my great Musham, my great grandpa. His name is Johnny McKay. And there's a video of him talking in Cree and storytelling. And so I just feel like, I think it's just, you know, runs through the family. You know, our people are just great storytellers. And I think it just happens innately, where some of us just kind of hone that gift a lot more, or kind of focus on it. So I love, you know, telling spooky stories. Like I've had so many experiences in my life, and, you know, my family, we're very like spiritual family. You know, our culture also is very spiritual. So it's not taboo for us to talk about stuff like that. It's not something that is like different or weird. It's something that is like everyday conversation where, you know, someone has an experience and it's like everybody's talking about it and sharing information about it. And so I guess just being raised up in a culture that way, I'm very open about sharing these stories. I don't feel shy about them, and they just, I guess, kind of come naturally. And yeah, and then so with my writing, now that I'm in my 30s, I'm actually starting to write a first draft of a novel. And that is a fantasy novel based on a lot of the Cree teachings and stories I grew up with, but based on a fantasy element. There's so much to it. I have a bunch of characters, and I've been sitting on this idea for, oh, I don't even know, like 8 years or so. I finally have about 30,000 words, and I'm just kind of plugging away at it. But basically, it's a story about like Witagokans. We call them Witagos, or like Witagos actually, but they're in Ojibwe, they call them Wendigos. And yeah, I don't really know how to say it. Like, I feel like I want to talk about it, but I feel like I would give too much information and do a lot of spoilers because I get so excited. But essentially, it's
I suffer. I suffer from that as well. So,
yes,
how do you feel?
It's about this young man. He there's a curse that runs in his family, and he ends up inheriting the curse. And that's already a spoiler already. But anyways, he ends up kind of going on an adventure trying to get rid of the curse. And at the same time, while he's doing this, there are different court politics that are going on. There are different treaty relations that are breaking between different nations. And there's like a rebellion that happens. So he's just doing all this work. And then around him, there's a bunch of these very court things going happening. And then, you know, threat of war and just kind of things like that. I want it to be very, very high fantasy. But also in like Cree based. So there's a lot of cultural, like spiritual beings that we have as Cree people that I put in there. We also have this one really powerful entity who's really awesome. His name is Big Brother. We call him Big Brother, but in our language, he's known as Wasagichak. It's kind of like an ode to Wasagichak. And it's really cool because before I started writing the story, I, you know, this is like a thing I don't really ever talk about online, but I made sure to put something forward for Big Brother, like Wasagichak, and I actually had a dream about him that night. And so I took that as like a go, like he's like, do it. So yeah, so ever since then, I've actually sat down too with a good friend of mine. His name is Isaac Murdoch. He's a really well-known storyteller. He's from Treaty 3 territory. And like I've talked about some of my ideas with him, and he was like, these stories need to be told. And so he was one of the ones that really motivated me to write and to share. Yeah, but Isaac Murdoch, you can search him online. He's also has really amazing stories. He has two books out on their Anishinaabe stories, and he's just really awesome too. So yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
Thank you.
No, that's, yeah, that's super.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm excited too.
I've read some kind of alternate, you know, like alternate history native writer B.L. Blanchard does it, you know, it's like it, as if colonialism, you know, that didn't exist. And then one of the most amazing parts of her books is kind of like the restorative justice aspect.
Yes.
So it's like justice system developed out and imperfect like other things are, but a justice system that you kind of inhabit and move through and be like, wow, what about this?
Yeah.
Restoration.
Super cool.
So yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, good luck.
Thank
Take
you.
Your time. I want like, once it's on like paper, I want to grab at it. And read it. But, so, talking about creation, I wanted to ask a question I asked on the show, art, philosophy, et cetera. What is art? What is art for you?
Oh, I feel like art is so many things. I feel like art is just the most powerful, amazing thing. And art is just in all different aspects. Like, it can be art, whether you're painting, drawing, writing, storytelling. You know, and I'm always reminded of Lou Riel. It was actually just Lou Riel Day here in Manitoba. I think across Canada, they call it Family Day. But, you know, he said a quote like 100 years ago where the spirit of his people will be brought back alive by the artist. And I just feel that, you know, and it's such a beautiful time period right now, especially within the Indigenous community. I feel like we're really in a sprouting Renaissance period now. You know, a lot of our truths of our ancestors and what have happened to our relatives is coming out. And now a lot of our people are starting to create and have joy, starting to dance and sing and draw and paint and write and storytell. And so I just feel like it's such an amazing process. And the Indigenous arts is something that is just booming here, especially in Winnipeg. You know, we have Indigenous creators and film. I also do film work also. So I actually wrote my first episode. So we have a TV show here through APTN, which is Aboriginal People's Television Network. We have a show called Seven Gen, and I'm one of the co-hosts. So now we're on season 3. We just finished doing the host stand-ups, and I wrote my first episode on an Indigenous author. His name is David A. Robertson. He has amazing, amazing works of art. But he talks about that too, the Indigenous Renaissance, how it's like we're now in that period of flourishing and celebrating. And a lot of that is expressed through arts. So yeah, I really love and appreciate art.
So exciting. And it's particularly with the Ryan quote about, you know, the empowerment of like the arts. It's like, you know, obviously I think artists like maybe believe that or feel that, but like that pronouncement of like, how do we get through, how do we get, you know, up and over? And it's a real really powerful idea. Exciting to hear about your writing and within film too. Gosh, like I was reading about a lot of things you do. Are there a few things don't do creatively? I wanted to ask you, I'm gonna ask like the big philosophical question. I want to say get out of the way, but like the name of the show is why do you think there's something rather than nothing?
Honestly, I feel that, there's something rather than nothing because, you know, we need something to strive for. And I feel that there's, you know, just so many beautiful things that have taken place to bring us to where we are today. You know, and a lot of our creation stories, they talk about a lot of the processes and actions that were taken for us to be here today and who we are. And so I feel that, you know, to have something rather than nothing is a lot better than having nothing. Because then if there's nothing, then what is there really like to be alive for, I guess, in a way? Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
about the arts too. You mentioned the flourishing Indigenous arts telling us in Manitoba. And popular culture wise, I've been excited to see things like TV shows, Reservation Dogs. I would say more exhibitions of Indigenous art in my area that I've seen in Oregon. And I've had the sense of, oh, even like science fiction, like the movie Prey, with Indigenous based story. Is there, like, I don't know how to ask this exactly, but it feels like that is gaining root and taking hold. And I think about culture and art and about exposing and the stories and reckoning with things. Do you think it is we're seeing a new stage or new era in Indigenous artists and creators?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a lot of the artists that were doing film already in the 80s and 90s, I feel that there's a lot more, and a lot of people are taking inspiration on some of the older movies, like even what's the one where they say, "Hey, Victor," Smoke Signals. And a lot of those directors and a lot of those actors and actresses, it's just really like amazing to see how Indigenous voices are now being more highlighted, and how our worldviews and our ideas are starting to get those platforms. Because I know back in those days, the 80s, 90s, you know, it was like very few and far between, because there wasn't really, as they say, like a market. But really, it's like our people are still valid regardless if there was a market or not. So now it's today, it's just amazing to see all the funding coming in that's available for different avenues, like podcasts, you know, writing, film, directing, whatever that is. It's really, I just feel like it's just taken off. And I think it's just going to be super cool to see where everything is in like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I get excited about it. And I think there was a time, I think, you know, just seeing that, you know, TV shows, for crying out loud, right? Like Rutherford Falls, that was on for a couple seasons. Janish Meeting, who's ridiculously hilarious. Just really, really fun, really fun stuff. I wanted to ask you, you do a bunch of things. I think they're important. Can you kind of convey to like listeners, like where to find like your teachings and the show, and you know, them to that?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the ones you talked about earlier was the treaty education. So that work I do through Treaty Relations Commissions in Manitoba. So you can search it up on YouTube. There's a lot of folks that get brought in to share teachings, and we actually get requested, and we travel across, like sometimes Manitoba or within the city, with various school divisions to talk about treaties and some of those teachings. So that's Treaty Relations Commission in Manitoba. And then I also do work with Indigenous Leadership Development Institute. We are an Indigenous owned and created organization that does executive training workshops and facilitation across Canada. So Indigenous awareness trainings, Indigenous life skills coach trainings, facilitator trainings. They also do like board trainings, and just various like goal setting, etc. So I do work in that capacity. And then Creepy Teepee, which is the work that Essa and I do. We have an Instagram name, Creepy Teepee. We're actually working on a project coming up this summer, and we actually have some amazing news that she's going to put forward soon that we're going to announce. So that's on Instagram. And then 7Gen is a TV show series that I co-host. We have 3 seasons, so the 3rd season will be out either this fall or next year. And we have 2 seasons, and they're available on APT and Lumi. Or you can go on the APTN website and check them out. You can also Google 7gen.ca. And then there's also, I was also involved in Little Bird. So I did a principal character on that series. There's 6 episodes. I believe it's on PBS now. We're also on APTN Lumi and Crave. So Little Bird is about a woman who was taken away from her family in the 60s scoop and reunites with her family. So there's that. And then my family and I, we also are a singing group. There's so many things. We're called Kind Heart Woman Singers. So we sing all over. We're actually going to try work on recording soon. And then my cousin and I, the work that we do, if folks are interested, is called Miteyatuski. You could just search up my name or Raven Heart, and that's how usually people connect with us. We have to get a website still up and going for Kind Heart Woman Singers, and then Miteyatuski, which encompasses the program, the Miki Wap, which is the 15-week. Yeah. So that's pretty much all of some of the stuff that I do. But I can you know, talk about and connect folks to that have, you know, there's a social media presence of each of those ones.
Thank you for, honestly, you know, your work and spending time with me on the show. I just want to let you know there's a deep appreciation of that.
Thank you.
I want to, one question before I let you go. So, about hockey and, you know, I don't know if I have a great, like understanding. I've read stories of, you know, hockey as a sport and some of the deep stories of indigenous players. And I think famously by Richard Wagamese,
Indian Horse. Yeah.
Yeah. And, no, I found the stories just so powerful. And I just want to have a sense, like, within does hockey have that role? I noticed indigenous players within hockey, and the stories that I read, it seems to be maybe important culturally in a way that I don't understand not being there. Does hockey have that power in, you know, amongst some of the indigenous youth playing it, male or female or other?
Oh yes, yeah, definitely. I know, like in Manitoba here, like just from personal experience, my nephew is actually at a hockey training camp currently. He's there for like 2 months, 3 months. And so yeah, like hockey is such a huge thing in our communities. There's so many of our young people that play it. I know up north in my community, God's River, there's Broomhall hockey. A lot of people play broomball hockey, and there's like whole tournaments that are based on broomball or hockey. And we also have, once a year, we actually call it our Vegas. It's so funny, but it's in Brandon, Manitoba, and, they have a huge tournament, and it's actually called Winterfest, but before it was the Dakota Ojibwe Tribal Council days, and they get bunch of folks all over Manitoba from different reserves that play various sports, and they win tournaments and championships, and it's all indigenous. So we call it our Vegas days because they have like a powwow, they have like all these tournaments going on, they have like vendors and food vendors, and you know, there's a lot of like memes that are shared about Winterfest. But yeah, like it's such like sports are huge on our communities, especially hockey. Like we all have hockey players in our families. Yeah.
That's so exciting. Thank you. And one of the things I find really exciting is I've been following the Professional Women's Hockey League, PWHL, and they like each week they bust attendance record.
Yes.
They had one like 13, then 15,000. I think the last
one's amazing.
1,000. And I'm like, oh shit, I know it's numbers, but I'm like, something's happening, folks.
Because
you get these, you know, some crappy teams, baseball games down this way, you don't get 7,000-8,000 people in those stands. And I'm like, almost 20,000 showing up for that.
Yeah.
Super exciting. Women's sports are on the rise, and it's good to see the hockey league progress in there. So, anyways, go Jets.
Yeah,
coach.
Yeah, they're doing pretty good. Yeah, hopefully they keep it up. Well, I'm sure they're going to do good regardless. Yeah.
One question about the Jets, you're up that way. I'm as goofy as I'm an obsessive Jets fan who's never been to Winnipeg. And my other team's Boston Bruins. I grew up on the East Coast. But Winnipeg, I say it's because of their travel schedule and how much they have to travel. And they have to travel more than any other team where they're located. Yeah. And so I make the excuse for the Jets. I do, because I think it's real.
Yes, totally. It's exhausting.
Worn down. This team is really good, but I'm really shaky and afraid here in February. What do you think about the Jets like this year? I'm not saying Stanley Cup, but let's say Stanley Cup. I'm worried about the falter. I'm worried about the late season fatigue and falter. Should I be?
I would say no, because a lot of folks were worried about What was the week that they have off? I can't remember. It was in Toronto this year.
Yeah, it was the All-Star.
All-Star, like, yeah. So yeah, a lot of people were worried about the All-Star break because the last few years, I think since 2018, they've had, like, after the All-Star break, there was a little bit of kind of struggles there. However, this season, they've actually been doing really good. Like, they, compared to last year, I know last year there was a lot of rumors of locker room kind of troubles and things like that. Whereas this year we have a new captain. There's been trade-ins and trade-outs. We have amazing guys coming on the team. And honestly, like, they're playing really good. Like, it's just been, like, really fun to watch them and to see. So I feel like they're going to keep going. Like, we're already slated for the playoffs. So
all right.
I'm not worried. Yeah.
They came out of the All-Star break and they got demolished by Toronto. I was like, I
don't
mean,
know.
Like,
yeah.
Like, no way. Not again. Not again. So they got back on track. I got to tell you, it's been a thrill for me, Ivana, to talk to you and to
thank you.
Yeah. And I for all the different things that you do and, appreciate your thoughts and, kind of like helpful ways of thinking about things, just hearing about them and the possibility of healing, naming grief. I've been trying to get more muscles in that way as well. Like, every human tries to, like, name it and deal with it. But I just want to thank you for, you know, that deep work that you do with folks to
thank
help
you.
Yeah, in that process. And a shout out to S.A. Lawrence Welsh, who joined the show quite a while back, as Ivana had mentioned, Creepy Teepee. And though you can't see me, I got the Winnipeg Jets hat on for myself and for Ivana. And got the S.A. Lawrence Welsh designed shirts, which you get, you can get by finding S.A. on Instagram and get some are beautiful designs. And Ivana, when that book pre-order date comes out, that's, hit me up with that pre-order date. No pressure, but I congratulations for working on that. And it's writing. Everybody's going to say something as artists and creators, but I'm going to say writing's the most difficult thing.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
it's hard. Yeah.
Best of luck and happy Indigenous Hockey Weekend, I guess.
Thank you.
Toba in Winnipeg. I'll be watching the game. And again, thank you so much for your time and for everything you've had to say.
Awesome. Thank you for inviting me. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Bye, Ivana.
Awesome. Okay, see you. Take care.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.
And listeners, to stay connected with us and our guests, visit somethingratherthannothing.com. Join our mailing list for exclusive updates and access to guest-created art. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, please like, subscribe, and leave a review on your podcast platform. People really read that shit. Your support helps us reach more listeners and spread our community across the planet. This is a global show, and we like to give a shout out to our many listeners across the world, including many listeners in Canada, Spain, Germany, UK, Argentina, Brazil, India, Thailand, and so many more places. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast for behind the scenes content. And the best way to help the show is to tell your friends about us. If you love it, they'll love it too. Tell your friends who love it. We love you. This is Something Rather Than Nothing Podcast.